Today in our hot seat, we've got Peter Avgondizo, and he's the founder of Argo Translations. So hi, Peter. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me. Looking forward to it. Or maybe I'm a little nervous. I'm not sure. It sounds very intimidating, the hot seat. I don't know.
It is, and it should be, but it does sound that you're ready for this. So
I'm ready. I am ready.
Welcome to C-Suite Hot Seat, the show where we put C-level executives from language service providers of all sizes in the hot seat. We will ask tough questions and get inspired answers. Our hosts today are Nimzi's Inga Boonen, Chief Growth Officer, and Sarah Hickey, VP of Research.
So Peter, in just one sentence, if possible, can you tell us what it is that Argo Translations actually does?
Sure, absolutely. So basically, we reduce the friction in the translation lifecycle. I mean, it's simple. It's really been our driving force for all these years. I used to be a translation buyer about 400 or 500 years ago. Actually, it's 28 years ago. I was a translation buyer and super frustrated with how translation services industry worked. And that's really been our core mission, is to just make the process simpler. It needs to be tailored to, you know, to fit each customer. There's not sort of a cookie cutter approach. I don't believe in that. It should be tailored, but kept simple. So that's really been it. That's been our sort of our recipe.
You mentioned that before being a language provider, you were a language buyer or language services buyer. I don't believe that that was the career that you dreamt of having as a kid, or was it?
Well, no, you know, my background is actually in finance and human resource management, but I grew up in an Italian-speaking household. So I always had an appreciation for language and translation. And when I looked at my options after college, you know, I was going to go the finance route. I wanted to be an analyst. That's actually what I wanted to do. But I really didn't like my options. And I happened to see this advertisement for a project manager at a medical device manufacturer for an Italian-speaking project manager. So I took that job, and I was there about a little over a year and a half before I couldn't handle the frustration of who we were buying from. And being young and naive, I started Argo Translation. A few months later, I was joined by our co-founder, Jackie Lucarelli, and the rest is history.
When you're not working, how do you like to spend your time? Do you have hobbies?
I think I used to have hobbies. No, I do. I do have some. I love to read, weight training, golfing, which I'm really terrible at. But yeah, those are my hobbies. And I love podcasts. I love to read. So I consume all sorts of, you know, content, whether it's podcasts, audio, reading, masterclass. I love masterclass, all that stuff.
Which would be the three different countries that you would like to go to, and why?
So I'm a little biased. My heritage would tell you that. I love Italy. So I haven't been back to Italy, believe it or not, since 2000. So I'm way overdue.
Wow.
And I used to go twice a year. So it's kind of crazy. But in the interim, we had a son. You know, he's 20 years old now, but he was very active in baseball. So that just makes it tough. Like, your summers are never your own. So I coached a little bit. That was actually a hobby for a bit too. So coached baseball and just kept us really busy. And then with aging parents, you know, we're sort of, at my age, we're sort of stuck in the middle between the needs of our children and the needs of our aging parents. So it's been tough, but I would love to get back to Italy again. I have a brother there. I have family there. So that would be great. And then I would love to see some countries that I haven't seen. I would love to get to Australia. Our CTO is in Australia. I would love to visit him. And then somewhere where there's a beach. So that could be anything. It could be, I don't know, Turks and Caicos, St. Lucia. I don't know, anywhere that has a beach. I would love to go as well.
Anywhere. So as long as you can lie on a beach, which you can also do in Italy and Australia, but we asked you to come up with three countries. Yeah. So
absolutely. Absolutely. The beaches are the beaches are beautiful in Italy. They really are.
Everything is beautiful in Italy.
Where is your family originally from in Italy?
My family is from Calabria, so way down south, specifically a town near Cosenza. It's called San Marco di Argentano, is where my folks are from. My brother lives way up north, though. He lives in Bologna, so he lives in Emilia.
Mm-hmm. Really? I'm acting like this because I lived in Bologna for 15 years.
And
I'm
actually
in Italy right now.
Are you? Where are you in Italy right now?
Right now, I'm in the Dolomites.
Oh, very nice. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. So that's funny. Yeah, my brother studied in Bologna and he never came back. He just loved it so much. He just fell in love with his tutor and away he went. So he's been there all this time.
Yeah. What's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given? Can you remember that?
Oh, wow. So much. I'm so thankful that I've had really good mentors along the way. I have a great business coach now as well. His name is Jerry Foles. I'm also in a group called the Lion's Pride, which is a group of really high energy entrepreneurs. I think I'm actually going to some advice that a business coach gave me a long time ago was to never let systems dictate how you do business, right? In other words, if you're on the phone with a client or you're having a conversation with a client and they're looking for something specific, to say, the system doesn't allow us to do that, to never say that. And I think that that's been a really good piece of advice and one that we've, one that we've really embraced. You know, we as small as our firm is, we've had development for about 15 years now. And we really believe in custom development of our applications for our customers. And I would say that never use the system as an excuse.
All right, Peter, time for the tougher questions.
Oh,
are you ready?
I'm ready.
What was your first breakthrough moment? Like when you did start your own business, when did you have your first breakthrough there? Do you remember something?
Yeah. Being from a family of immigrants, right? My folks came to the States in the 60s. So they weren't necessarily always like really overly welcomed, right? In terms of, hey, here we are, especially they were a small town, southeastern Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. There weren't many Italians there. There were some, but you know, they kind of had to sink or swim in terms of the language. And that always really resonated with me about how that had certain impediments in their life. And growing up and serving essentially as their unofficial interpreter in many instances, you know, my father has really good language skills. He's traveled the world. He speaks six languages fluently. But my mom was always, you know, more of a traditional, you know, Italian mama, right? She was at home and taking care of us kids. So her English wasn't as strong. Her friends were all Italian speakers. So I was inspired, I think, to make it easier for immigrants or for people that are challenged with language. And that was really important to me. And I had my first interpretation experience when I was about 12. I was in a bank and there was this old Italian man. He reminded me of my grandfather and he just wanted to take some money out to give to one of his grandkids, but he couldn't communicate. And I stepped in as a 12-year-old and helped interpret. Later, find out he's a friend of my parents anyway. So he was very thankful. Beautiful. But to me, that I don't know. I felt like I was 12 feet tall after I helped that that gentleman with his transaction. So that resonated with me from an early age. And in terms of the breakthrough, I think it was when we completed like our first really large project after starting the business. And, you know, when it was just Jackie and me, you know, we, like any small business, we were doing everything, right? Everything, the billing, the accounting, the project management. We certainly had good translators that were contractors like most people have in their model. But when we did our first project, it was for a large manufacturer in Wisconsin, and they were opening an office in China, and it had a really tight deadline. And this was back before the tech was, you know, you would just send a link and people would download things. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case. He had about 600 PowerPoint slides that he needed transparencies created for. I know the younger folks won't know what an overhead projector is, but it's basically slides because he was going to do a presentation there. And he, and of course, this was very exotic. Oh, this is the Chinese language. How do we reproduce this? I mean, 28 years ago, there was a lot of technical challenges with something like that. So we created those slides, created four copies of the transparencies, and drove them to his house hours before he was leaving for his flight, and it had huge impact for the business. And I thought, you know, look at little us, our little two-person office, help them open this operations facility in China. So I really realized the gravity of what we were doing in that moment.
Wow, that's amazing.
Wow, that's beautiful.
That's a really great success story there as well. Very encouraging also.
makes it meaningful. You know, I mean, yeah. I think no matter what we do in our life, we have to have a reason to get up in the morning. And I mean, now I have hundreds of those stories, you know, from small scale to big scale. And it really makes us feel good. It gives us a reason to do what we do.
From what I hear, at least, I have never started my own business, but it's not that easy. And so there's a lot of roadblocks that you encounter. You make mistakes. You ideally learn from those mistakes and move on. And of course, your business is successful now. So I assume you have learned from whatever mistakes you encountered along the way. But can you tell us about one maybe that you still remember, like a significant one, and that you've learned from something that you overcame?
I wish I could say we've never made mistakes, but we wouldn't be human if we did. And I always tell clients, like if I'm involved in a pitch and we're talking to clients, say, you know, anyone who comes in here and tells you that they're going to do perfect translations every time, you know, you should run as fast as you can. because issues happen. It's still a human process. Even when we involve, you know, machine translation, mm-hmm. there's still human intervention. So we are imperfect, and it is a very creative process when done well. So there's going to be mistakes, and we've had them. Certainly I remember one that really, sticks out for me, and it was, probably about year three of the business. It was a large customer, really prominent global manufacturer of cleaning products. And I still count them as a client today, great customer. And, we were working with a new marketing manager. And he was new to translation. So we made some assumptions, and we all know that story about assumptions. He really didn't understand like how Quark Express worked and how layout worked. And I remember when we asked for the source files, he basically had like an intern type up a file in Word. And it was an absolutely god-awful document. I'm like, are you sure this is what you want for your source document? Because, you know, we're going to translate the source document. He's like, no, this is what we want. And we did the translation, we did the layout, and it looked as good as the English, which was not great. You know, it was not professional. It was not well polished. And he's like, well, what's this? I'm like, well, we did what you asked us to do. That was the source file. He said, no. I wanted this, which he had sent us something in the mail, right? He's a hard copy, basically. Not everybody even had Acrobat on their desktops back then, right? So we just had this disconnect. And I said, well, where does this come from? We translated the file you gave me. So, well, when you asked for a file, I had my intern type it up. I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. So we had to redo the project in Quark Express. And I said, you know, finally I said, listen, do you have a designer? Do you have someone in your office we can talk to? And he finally connected us. But that's really resonated with me because it's all about communication, right? And sometimes your client tells you something and they're really not knowing the correct question to ask. They're not knowing the right. So that I'm kind of glad that happened when it did, because, you know, we're obviously a lot more thorough. And even when a customer tells us something like, hey, this is the file. Just if something in your gut tells you it's not right, just keep pushing.
I'm curious, do you have a pet peeve when it comes to clients?
Oh boy, that's tough. I guess, you know, sometimes it's around ignorance around the client review process. Like I feel client review is something that's really, really tricky. And I think all too often, you know, clients will just throw something over the fence, not understand who they're throwing it over the fence to. Mm-hmm. And one of my favorite stories that I've, you know, shared on a podcast is, you know, we had a client that was a manufacturer of CNC machines. So pretty technical. And it was a brochure and a cut sheet that we did. And he was the ad agency for this small manufacturer. And the manufacturer went to a trade show and they called the marketer in a panic. And they said, oh my God, I showed the brochure to a customer at my booth and they said they don't even think it's Spanish. I'm like, oh gosh, this was like one of our lead technical Spanish translators. Lots of experience, really good with heavy engineering type materials. So I had to dig a little bit. I'm like, who's your customer? You know, I was trying to figure, is it a register problem? Maybe they don't know. Well, it's one of my good clients brought his sixth grade son who studies Spanish.
Oh, no. I'm like, so typical.
I'm like, oh Lord. I said, do you know what they teach sixth graders when they're studying Spanish? And he's like, no, I'm not sure. They find out, they learn, you know, ¿dónde está el baño? You know, they literally learn like how to ask for a bathroom. Do you think they're covering CNC machines in sixth grade Spanish? So, no, probably not. I'm like, here's another question. Do you think he understands it in English? Like, show him the English. He probably doesn't understand that.
Yeah, like, and then it's not like English either.
And that really resonated with me. He's like, oh yeah, right. I'm like, have him show like a technical resource. Find someone else on the trade show floor that, you know, maybe is from a Spanish speaking country. And he's like, okay, I understand. Now that's probably an exaggerated example. However, it's true. You know, sometimes even in client review, it's like, oh, well, let me ask, you know, this person in marketing about this technical manual. Well, that's not the right person, or we'll do like a legal document and they show someone in market, you know, it has to be the right person. Right. So I think that's sometimes language is discounted. So, oh, well, you speak Italian, you must be able to read a patent. No, I can't. Like, that's not part of my tool set.
I feel like I want to ask you a bunch more of my questions that I have on the list, but the most important one I want to ask at the end always is, what advice would you give to young entrepreneurs starting their own business in the language industry today?
You know, coming from a finance background, I would say, you know, cash flow is king. I would say this is a really great time to be involved in any business, because the tools that are out there, whether it's, you know, using a lightweight accounting system like a Xero, or you know, using tools like Zapier, which will connect different cloud applications together. Like, these things didn't exist when we started. I mean, it was so hard to get things done. And now there's so many tools out there and they're not necessarily expensive. So I would say, you know, look what you can afford, use tools to improve your efficiencies. But always make sure that, you know, you're keeping an eye on cash flow. It's super, super important. You know, you want to make sure to be able to pay yourself, pay your employees, pay your vendors, always pay your vendors on time. Always, 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 always. And don't be an envelope switcher. Like, that was something that really annoyed me when we started in this business, that I'd hear complaints from translators. I would say, well, I don't often get paid because they said that they didn't get paid. And you know, the question is, don't do that. If you're starting a business, you're a business. And when your bills are due, pay them. You don't wait for your customers to pay you. That's not running a business. That's being an envelope switcher. So keep your integrity. You know, make sure that you have some sort of some code that you live by, and make sure you apply it to the translator you use the least often, the person that comes to deliver the mail. Doesn't matter, across the board. That has to be solid in terms of how you treat people.
I love that. That's very good advice. Thank you, Peter.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And it was really great to have you in the hot seat, and we hope you didn't sweat too much, even though temperatures might be rising there as well.
You were both very kind. Thank you. Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
Great. If anyone else feels like letting off some steam and you're part of the C-suite at a company in the language services industry, do sign up with us if you dare to sit in our hot seat.
And for the viewers at home, this was it for today, folks. Thank you for watching, and look out for the next episode that will be published as a video on Multilingual TV and as a podcast on the NIMSY website. We'll see you there.